I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Don't say you never get anything for free. You can get a free 30-day trial of Love Film, the one-stop shop to rent films and games online simply by going to thefootballramble.com/lovefilm. Films and games by post, or you can stream films on your PC, TV, PS3, and now on your iPad. To check the terms and conditions, find out more, and claim your free trial, go to thefootballramble.com/lovefilm now.
What were the reasons that made you sign for QPR? Because obviously you had a career.
Close the window, Lukey.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah.
But everybody's got time for this. It's the Football Ramble, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yeah. And it's September, damn it all. I've got Jim with me.
Hello.
Peter.
Ego, Hanase Maska.
Lukey.
Check.
And me, Marcus. Now, boys, Joey Barton has recently joined Olympique Marseille. He's done it.
Mm.
Or they've
done it. I thought
he
was making that up.
Did you?
Yeah, I genuinely thought he was like sort of making up their interest and appear like an attempt to like, you know, appear like the sort of, you know, hipster he is.
Yeah.
But
no, he's in.
I like France before it was cool.
Exactly.
Cool.
Did he shut the transfer window behind him as he went?
He booted it shut.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm going to ask you a question though. What do you think his first reckless act will be in southern France, Jim? Or maybe northern France if they go away.
Well, wherever. They seem to get worse and worse, don't these reckless acts?
Yes.
So this time, I don't think we'll ever know why. Because I think he'll go into such a blind fury that he'll just take hostages at the stadium.
Hostages?
Just like, yeah, in the net. Like just
like
drag a player
net.
Into the net and drag a fan in.
They'll never get
such
out of that,
a sort of flurry of kicks and headbutts that no one will get near him for ages.
I agree with what you're saying about them getting worse and worse, because first off it was punching a guy outside McDonald's allegedly, then it was punching Usman Darbo in a training ground.
Cigar in the eye.
And then he went to the National Portrait Gallery of The Guardian. So
animal.
It's worse and worse.
The man's an animal.
Taking hostages is the first answer.
Taking hostages in the goal mouth.
Yeah. As I say, we'll never know why. It's just the blind rage of Joey Barton. You can't predict it, Marcus. You're looking at me like that's a
no, but I think it's the logistics.
Put a cigar out in someone's eye.
No, I'm not saying. No, I'm saying, how would you take hostages in the goal?
Because the flurry of headbutts and kicks will be so thorough that no one will get near it.
Oh, I see. Well, if you ask a stupid question, don't be surprised to get a stupid answer, I suppose. Pete.
Well, we were talking about the cigar in the eye. I reckon he might go with a partially lit French bread.
I thought you were going to say French cigarette.
Yeah.
Or possibly something guillotine related. He may try. He might try and behead a monarch. I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Either one of those, really.
Straight to the top.
Take your pick, mate.
Yeah.
I've gone on a slightly different tangent here, and I've gone join a French hip hop collective.
Right.
You know, this basically is like French.
Is that reckless?
If you let me, hip hop is quite a sort of big thing in France. Like MC Solar and Session Desire, that sort of stuff. He'll definitely learn French because that's just something he'll do, isn't it? And he'll be really pleased with himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he fancies himself as a bit of a social commentator. So it seems like the obvious move. He'll basically do an expletive-ridden hip hop song in French about how much he hates Mark Hughes. Something like that.
He'll try and do that, but what he will actually do is just eat a load of brie and then get fat and rubbish.
Yeah, not getting the team.
Yeah, not getting the team.
I was thinking he might set about somebody with a frozen baguette, but more realistically, I think he'll get sent off within his first two or three games.
For violent conduct?
I just think he'll be so pumped up.
Yeah.
And he'll get a bit of proceed.
And so on and so forth. I think he'll get sent off, and that's won me the points, because your lot are rubbish suggestions.
They're all better than yours, mate.
Outrageous.
I did quite like it how the Marseille fans had a banner up with the words "Welcome, sweet and tender hooligan," which is of course a reference to the Smiths.
Yeah. It's nice that.
His favourite band.
I genuinely think he'll do well there, and I hope he does. In the same way that I wanted Joe Cole to succeed. But yeah, come back, didn't he, the little jerk?
Yeah, but he did seem to do well, didn't he, Joe Cole? That was weird. He just
but he should stay there.
Yeah, I think he should stay there. He's still at Liverpool, isn't he?
Yeah.
Earning a ridiculous amount of money and then seemed to have no intention of playing him.
My favourite thing about Joe Cole was when Andy Brassel announced that he had started dressing like the manager at Lille. He basically started dressing like him.
Wow.
Possibly in a vain attempt to get picked more often.
Mirroring.
Yeah.
Learn from the best. Well, let's move on to the league which was formerly known as the Premiership, the Premier League. Let's start with Southampton 2, Manchester United 3. Jim, is it sickening to see Van Persie do that? Or?
It absolutely is, yeah. It's really horrible. This has been the worst one. We've lost a lot of players like that.
Yeah.
But Fabregas was understandable. A lot of them have been completely understandable. This one's just like...
But when he missed that pen, you must have loved it.
Well, to be honest, I just know how good he is. And I was like, this isn't the end of this. I can't even enjoy this. I daren't.
I like the fact that he's got to pull up another team from its bootstraps.
Yeah, I know. It's weird, isn't it?
I've been here before.
Yeah, but I mean, he was really sort of humble after the game as well, wasn't he? Talking about how, you know, he apologised for missing the penalty and stuff. He's like, stop! Oh, just be that prick you were when you first signed for us.
Yeah. But it's easy to be contrite when you've scored a hat-trick.
Absolutely. Yeah.
If they'd lost that game 2-1 or whatever and they'd missed a pen, he would probably... would have been a little bit more annoyed.
Yeah, but I mean, United, you know, they look formidable, don't they? They've got obviously they've got a couple of sloppy mistakes at the back for the goals, but you know, they'll iron that out. And you know, when Rooney comes back as well, it's that they look, you know, they already they've got that, you know, invincible kind of feel about them. As soon as they equalise, you just knew, absolutely knew they were going to win.
No matter how much their personnel changes, they go into the last 10 minutes of a game 2-1 down.
Yeah.
You'd be an idiot if they're not going to win.
But you say change of personnel, you say all that kind of stuff. It was still Paul Scholes who came on and changed the game.
He really
but they were doing that before Paul Scholes.
One day in the year 2020 something, they will be without him. And then what are they going to do?
They're really in trouble, aren't they? If that's the best we've got.
But do you know what I mean, though? Scholes, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
It was magnificent.
Yeah.
I think Manchester United were on the back foot because of, you know, the colossal support of Southampton. The noise.
Are you leading the witness?
Yes, pretty much, yes.
Okay, right.
I want you to dig a big hole.
I thought at times Southampton played really well. I genuinely did. I thought they played with real verve. And it was nice to see.
That chap celebrated. Ricky Lambert, I think his name.
Ricky Lambert did celebrate indeed, yeah. The big issue for them, though, was that how they... I know it's against Manchester United, but it's a home game. They went ahead. Yeah, they need
twice.
To close games out.
Triple substitution.
Exactly. But there are encouraging signs for them, actually. The key thing about the empty seats, though, is something I mentioned last week in the home game against Wigan, and people were saying, well, you know, maybe it's quite expensive down there. Maybe they're saving themselves for the Manchester United game, which I suppose is sort of understandable if you've got limited funds. But the thing was, there were empty seats again in all sort of areas of the pitch you could see on the television. But the plot thickens because, according to a few Southampton fans who I know, they said the game was officially sold out on the club's website 2 weeks ago. So if you're announcing games as being sold out and then decent amounts of people aren't turning up, not only are you robbing people who probably wanted to go but couldn't, but you're portraying a terrible image for the club. You know, they've got questions to answer, I think. If I was a Southampton fan, I'd be genuinely annoyed about
it. It's
that.
Olympic,
yeah,
guess.
Weird.
Yeah, it really is. Olympic it is, isn't it? Yeah. And they're not corporate seats. There's no way they're corporate seats. They're behind the goal and down by the touchline and stuff.
Yeah. Are they staying away because of the small stripes?
Yeah, possibly.
There's maybe just
the people down there look like seats. Are they a particularly ugly lot? Luke, yeah. I've never been.
No, they're all completely normal. So yeah.
Completely normal. Well, yeah, I mean, another 3-2 against the big Manchester side, as opposed to a small Manchester side.
But I mean, they're not going to face teams better than those two. You know, if they carry on playing like that,
they'll take a lot of heart. Will they not? It's disappointing, of course.
There was a spell when they were 2-1 up where they looked like they'd go 3-1 up as well. They played really, really well. I think, you know, we've yet to see, you know, the real Southampton. They've had a really difficult run in from all the promoted sides.
Yeah. And they spent some money as well, let's not forget.
And then Ramirez.
Nice to see Miyuka there.
It was.
The Zambian hero.
What I was going to say to you was the only thing you could possibly say would affect them would be, because on paper it's an encouraging result, but it's the manner of a defeat that may affect them slightly. But yeah, apart from that, they did well. I thought they did okay. And the thing about Manchester United is, I was thinking, I put this out on Twitter earlier, I was thinking, when was the last time that Manchester United had two really top class fullbacks playing at the same time for them? Yeah, they've got real issues down that flank.
Everett
is shocking these days.
It's weird, isn't it, how players take a massive dip, because Everett was one of the best fullbacks in the world at one point.
He's been bad for a while, though, hasn't he?
He has. This is not overnight, but it's just strange, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
It's very un-Alex Ferguson to not address it as well. You would have thought they'd have brought in a left back.
You think he'd probably try and retrain somebody? Yeah. Well, he's got enough strikers.
He's had Valencia playing right back at times, hasn't he? Like large periods. I mean, but people were asking me if I thought there were actually that many decent fullbacks around. There probably aren't, are there?
Well, I think he's played Phil Jones there. He's played Chris Smalling there. I don't think he knows who his best fullback is. So maybe he's just willing to give the time, you know, to find out who really stands out and who makes it their own.
Yeah, clueless.
Everyone was decent when they won the Champions League in 2008, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And then they had Wes Brannett right back in that season because Neville was injured for the whole season, pretty much. But before that, you're going back to like Irwin.
Well, yeah, I mean
Neville. You know,
I think Raphael and Fabio were both supposed to kind of step up to fill those roles, and they've not really bridged that gap.
Interesting one, I think.
Yeah. Perhaps the big match of the weekend was Liverpool against Arsenal, Jim. Much better from your boys.
Hugely betterer. Something I was impressed with was the way they closed down Pepe Reina. He gave the ball away, like, shockingly from his goal kicks quite a bit, and from his possession. He put it out for throws when they closed him down. And when Arsenal close down, they're so much better. And it's a habit they slip out of. And actually, Abu Diaby's kind of career is a bit like that as well, in a way. Yeah. A lot of people raving about Diaby, rightly so, because he was the man of the match. He was brilliant. He was really Arsenal's engine room. But the thing with him is he'll have a game like that, sort of one in every five games, and then he'll disappear.
That's
and because Pity's been out for so long, people are like, oh, Diaby's back now, it's going to be great. This is exactly what Arsenal need. They didn't need to replace Song, but I don't think it's going to be as straightforward.
He can go missing for months. That's the trouble.
The thing is, I mean, he's had a year out, so hopefully, you know, he should be as motivated as ever to get his career back on track. So hopefully, he'll be more sort of dedicated.
He's not ever put two seasons in a row together.
No,
Diaby really.
But his injury is chronic. When he had that injury from the Sunderland player Dan Smith, works in the call centre now. Nice one, mate. it's just ruined his ankle forever. Basically, he's always going to require sort of like special treatment on it and stuff, and it will recur. So it has to be managed properly.
I'm sympathetic to that. I mean, that's not really being callous. That's not really Arsenal's problem.
Well, absolutely.
They need someone who's consistently performing now. And I agree, he was great against Liverpool. You know, a special word for Pepe Reina, who was, you know, largely dreadful, actually, and has been dreadful since, not dreadful, but been nowhere near the level he's been at before since the goalkeeping coach under Benitez left.
You wonder if it's a sort of symptom of a lack of confidence at Liverpool.
Well, this guy he worked with, Xavi Valero, under Benitez, was apparently the guy who made him the keeper he is to a large extent, and he's gone now. I mean, Benitez might have taken him with him to Inter, possibly, and he's not been the same. See, I mean, the errors he's making. I mean, I know the errors all the goalkeepers, or a lot of goalkeepers, are making in this season so far.
Yeah, it's weird.
It seems to be all over Europe. Some sort of like M. Night Shyamalan style.
Kelvin
virus.
Davis.
So I mean, to that level, then I suppose it is a little bit, you know, it's a little bit harsh just to single out Reina, I suppose. But that was a shocking error, really.
Yeah.
You know, and whilst Liverpool aren't playing terribly, and not inspiring,
but he's still kind of retained, when he has gone through those poor spells, he has kind of retained his position in his national team. And although that's not the main position, there's not a lot of competition in that area.
Who's that?
Reina.
You're talking about Reina here.
Yeah, but he never plays for Spain.
So that's what I mean. But he still retains. He still retains some sort of spot in the international setup without actually earning it, for me.
And
Liverpool haven't been able to get a decent goalkeeper in for quite some time. Well, so it just seems that
we've talked about the sort of goalkeeping area in football teams, because it's quite an interesting one. I mean, from what I know, Reina's kept his place as third choice keeper in the Spain national team because he's sort of like the cheerleader of the team.
That's right.
It's good for sort of team spirit and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So to an extent, you're right, Peter. I think, though, that it's difficult getting a goalkeeper who's going to push for a place, because goalkeepers obviously want to play.
Well, especially when Iker Casillas is the captain.
Yeah, you know. He's never going to get. You know,
but you do get goalkeepers who are second and third choice goalkeepers, and they know that, and the club knows that.
But
know.
The best goalkeeper to get as a second choice keeper is either a really, as I've said before, is a really old hand who's happy to sit on the bench, play every so often because he's old now, or a young, confident keeper learning this trade. If you have a goalkeeper of any decent quality as a reserve keeper, he's going to move on. He's never going to play.
Well, Man City have brought in Richard Wright. Remember him?
That's a strange one.
Well, it's a classic example, because he's got experience.
Yeah.
He was without a club, and he's happy presumably to pick up a paycheck. And if a push, if you need to use him, which in an ideal situation is never.
You're
a goalkeeper, so you're not going to use him.
But you're not going to think, oh my goodness. You know.
No, but at least he's done it before.
What it does as well is it negates anyone in the squad being uncomfortable, because you know he's not going to realistically challenge Joe Hart for the number one squad, is he?
No.
So you're not going to have any potential tension there. It's quite a good thing.
Or the number two shirt.
On Liverpool. On Liverpool, I think, you know, they need to be given time. Because Brendan Rodgers' style isn't the sort of thing you can just transplant overnight. They just never found a rhythm that really sort of worked for them at the weekend, I think. But the Carroll situation's really strange. I mean, Fenway Sports Group have come out and said they've released an open letter, haven't they? Sort of talking about how they didn't want to bring in players that were only going to contribute for a couple of seasons, obviously referring to Clint Dempsey, which seems to criticise Brendan Rodgers' transfer policy. It's really, really strange. And surely you've got to be getting the replacement in before you loan out Carroll. It's not like they're dependent on a transfer fee for that. It's just really bad.
Really candid about that. It seems like a strange sort of statement to make that I wish we'd got someone in. It's like, well, you know, a loan move's a loan move. You could probably recall him if you really wanted to.
Well, they can do that in January.
Yeah, I think the communication situation there seemed a bit strange, because even though that sounds like an excuse to me about Dempsey, it seems to me, from what I read, they last minute didn't really have the money at their disposal, so they tried to swap Jordan Henderson, didn't they?
Right.
With Fulham for Dempsey. That didn't work. They lost Dempsey to Spurs, which then meant they didn't want Carroll to go in the end, because Rodgers admitted later that he wouldn't have let him go had they lined up a replacement. Yeah. And now Liverpool seemed light up front. But at the same time, by the way, you know, I think John Henry was refreshing to come out and be as frank as he was, but it's quite easy to blame people who are now gone. So I'm not sure if Liverpool fans will see through
this. It smacks of sort of like, what's that, Brendan? I can't hear you. You're breaking up. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. You want to buy who? Yeah.
I also think, by the way, that you know, the transfer policy they've had under Connolly and Dalglish was woeful.
Well, they've utterly dismantled it, really. Yeah. They didn't get rid of Henderson, but clearly they were trying to. Adam's gone.
But Henry said
Downing's going to be a left back, apparently. Although he played quite well, actually, to be fair to him, against Arsenal.
Henry said, didn't he, we're still undoing the bad work of a previous regime stuff. But by the way, Liverpool, there's a couple of strikers out there who could and lend them some support. Like Del Piero's available.
Yeah. Michael Owen?
Michael Owen.
Well, Owen's a huge runner.
I'd take Del Piero over Owen. All day.
I think Owen, if he's going to revive his career anywhere, surely that's the last place on earth where he's actually going to care.
Such a gamble.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, but I mean, they've not really got a choice, have they, until January.
No, but a gamble for Owen as well, though.
Yeah.
He spends all his time sort of it looks to me from a distance that he's just excusing himself out of every move possible.
Absolutely.
Oh, he doesn't want to go to a top Premier League club. We'll get realistic about it.
He's fallen out of love with football, quite obviously.
Yeah.
I've read something in The Guardian a while ago talking about Michael Owen, and apparently he's just absolutely just into his horse racing now.
Right,
so that's become his passion.
Mm. Interesting.
Indeed. Well, talking of clubs doing transfer businesses and whatnot, Spurs did some. Yeah. They did some properly by the looks of it. Mm. They signed Dembele, Dempsey and Hugo Lloris.
Yeah.
They missed out on Moutinho by 4 minutes, apparently.
And also apparently Berbatov. Did you hear that? They tried to re-sign him.
Actually.
Apparently so. Yeah.
I don't know that.
But Dembele didn't take too long to open his account. No. What a goal it was. No.
That's a great goal.
Yeah, it was really, really excellent. I don't know. Are Spurs stronger now than they were last season? I'm not sure they are.
I sort of thought about that, and I thought... So I wrote down they lost King, Modric, Kranjčar, Van der Vaart and Sahar, and replaced with Dembele, Dempsey, Sigurdsson, Vertonghen, and if you count Huddleston because he's been out for a whole year. It's actually not bad. And Lloris as well. I mean, Lloris is a great goalkeeping setup there. You've got the French captain there, 25 or whatever he is, pushing a 41-year-old decent canny operator.
Friedel,
for
fantastic
sure. Friedel's the great thing about it is Friedel was excellent against Norwich, and he's been good actually these last two games. But if Friedel does get forced out of the team by Lloris, he's not going to kick up a fuss. He's not going to go.
No.
Yeah, he'll be annoyed, of course he will, because he's a professional, but he's 41 years old. You know what
he hasn't got the energy.
Yeah, exactly.
He can't kick them bottles over.
Be bothered.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. But yeah, they drew 1-1 with Norwich, dropping points at home again to lesser opposition. Mm. I know it's a new regime and all, but
it's a long term thing, though, isn't it? Same with what Jim was saying about Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely. But still.
Yeah, you think they would have won that game.
Norwich came 12 last season. They're not a bad team.
No, they've got a new manager.
Yeah, no, I understand.
So you're saying it's perfectly fine, and no Spurs fans will complain about a draw at home to Norwich.
No, they will complain. They did complain. I'm not saying they should. I'm not saying they didn't complain. I'm saying that, you know, if you start looking at football as a sort of permanent thing rather than something that happens every year and is bookended by massive bombastic marketing campaigns, so you're meant to believe that a 1 year of football is an era in itself, then actually, in 10 years' time, you might have an actual, you know, like a proper legacy of a manager. You're not going to get an Alex Ferguson. Everyone wants Alex Ferguson to be the manager of their club, or someone like that to be there for 20 years.
Alex Ferguson wasn't Alex Ferguson the first couple
exactly.
of weeks.
Exactly. Yeah. You're not going to give someone a chance about Alex Ferguson if he doesn't get to nail his name on the door. Mm. You've got to give him a chance, you know. And Redknapp's gone now. And yes, there are positives to Redknapp's regime. Yes, he brought them, you know, qualified success in certain areas. But he wasn't a long-term... It was never going to be a long-term thing.
No, but the signings of Dempsey, you know, in particular, that is one that it kind of suggests that they're going to continue with this regime of short-term fixes. I mean, alongside sort of, you know, Dembele's.
He's only 29.
29, though. I mean, it's not going to be there that long-term, is it?
And he clearly didn't want to be there. Let's make it clear. He wanted to be at Liverpool, but...
Yeah, it's a very, very Redknapp signing, isn't it? You can see Redknapp having gone in for Dempsey.
I don't think signing a 29-year-old who's a very good player for what was it, 6 million or something.
I'm not criticising it. Mm. I'm just saying it's a similar policy to what they've had in the past.
I think Moutinho was Vieira Spaish's first choice.
Of course,
I think that's a big disappointment to him and to the club that they've not got him. That said, there are encouraging signs there. I think if you want to speak about the Norwich game specifically, you know, he gambled a little bit with the changes he made. The Huddleston decision to get for a red card was an appalling decision. He should never have gone. It wasn't a red card. It wasn't arguably even a foul. So, I mean, there are mitigating circumstances around why they didn't win that game. That's all I'm saying. They panicked a bit. They didn't look that great, admittedly. They need a bit of composure and a bit of confidence, especially the last 10 or 15 minutes, because that goal was coming for a long time.
At least,
but there are signs there. It's fine.
At least AVB is not going to sign five strikers every season and then chuck them on the, you know, the manure heap at the end of the season like the last regime did. So, you know,
Dempsey could realistically be around for three or four seasons.
Yeah,
he's a fit lad, you know. He's an intelligent player. He makes good runs. He knows he can find space,
scores goals.
Yeah, he's not a last defender striker, is he? No. He's not going to be worried about him if he loses a half a yard, is what I'm saying. He's got
he will, and I have no doubt that Dempsey will hit the ground running and be excellent for Tottenham. But, you know, like I say, it is a fairly sort of... I'm just... all of the point I was making, it's just a very sort of Redknapp-style signing.
And he
I
has
don't know if the regime change is as dramatic as it may at first seem.
And okay. Dempsey has compound eyes like a fly, so he can see around corners.
And that's a fact. That's science.
That is science.
Yeah.
Very bulbous.
Andy Carroll's gone to West Ham.
Mm.
Big Sam's got his boy.
I tell you, I think West
that's
Ham,
the one, isn't it, Jim?
Yeah, that's huge.
A match made in seventh heaven.
Lightning rod.
Yeah. Big Sam would have carried Big Andy Carroll on his back all the way to West Ham, wouldn't he?
He can't believe his luck.
Yeah. And a great debut as well.
It was
involved in pretty much everything.
I tell
everything.
You, they look fantastic. They look like Allardyce's Bolton, and Allardyce has not had a team that good since he was at Bolton.
He's not had a play like Kevin Davis.
West Ham, I think they'll be top 10 this season. That's their
top
aim.
Top 10?
Wow. Well, I think 10th, I think they could finish that. Look, this is... It's not West Ham, it's Allardyce. That's the way I'm seeing it. It's Allardyce with a squad that's going to work for him. They're not getting anywhere near the relegation. Do you want to point out, I've not at any point backtracked.
Top 10, well, 10. I said top 10 and you went, well, 10th.
That's top 10.
All right.
You know what
you've done.
No, I know what you're trying to put into my mouth.
I know.
And I'm getting sick of saying that.
carry on.
What happens in Edinburgh, etc.
Well, I was really harsh on West Ham last week, and I'll stand by that. They were shocking, but this week they were really good, really good. And it wasn't even Andy Carroll. It was almost the idea of Andy Carroll that was. So
yeah,
good,
I know. They were terrified of him.
It was like sometimes Andy Carroll wouldn't even be doing something, anything. But then, like Freda Hangeland would have been like, oh, like panic, like Mr. Head or something. Because Andy Carroll was somewhere in the same postcode.
Existential crisis.
I thought they were confusingly bad for them. They're not a bad team. You know,
Berbatov and Kieran at Richardson are there now.
Yeah, he came on, didn't he, Berbatov? He didn't really have a kick. But the good thing about West Ham, and Jim, you mentioned Allardyce at Bolton, and they got a reputation as being this sort of set piece efficient, sort of long ballish side, mostly sort of, you know, championed by us as well. So we have to take our own sort of portion of blame for that. But the thing they did at Bolton at their best is they mixed it up.
Yeah, well,
they did that. West Ham did that at the weekend.
Well, the thing with Allardyce is it doesn't always do that. If they're playing Man United, they'll do that, you know. But against a team like Fulham, they will be a bit more flowing. Mm. But there were still long balls in there and stuff like that. But yeah, they're. I think Stoke have come along and just made it been so much worse than you could ever sort of, you know, accuse Bolton of having been at the time. That it makes it seem almost, you know, like Barcelona now.
Yeah,
I just thought that Martin Yol, don't rub your face like that because it's going to end up in a montage. You know?
Yeah,
it's guaranteed. It's a gift to Sky Sports.
Big Easter Island face.
It's easy the biggest face in the Premier League.
Without a doubt.
Possibly in Europe.
I'd like to see the Optostats on his hand then. Yes. See how long it takes for him to get from one side of the face to the other.
It's a whole 90 minutes. The face is massive.
He's, a lot like the Thing, isn't he, from the Fantastic Four?
Yeah, he looks exactly like that. Yeah, the thing about West Ham is that Marcus, Jim says about them having a decent season. They've actually started really well at home. Mm. They've looked really good, and the sort of the confusion and the tension around their sort of home performances in the Championship last season doesn't seem to be there. The fans seem to be a lot more
patient. Allardyce said from the outset that he wanted to make Upton Park a sort of fortress, and it hadn't worked straight away, but you know, obviously he's been putting some effort into making that happen, so yeah, fair play to him.
Well done all round in West Ham town. What about Manchester City? They beat QPR, and that was like the last day of the season, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
They signed Javi Garcia from Benfica.
Good they player. Signed like five players on the last day, didn't they?
Richard Wright, obviously
being the main one,
the best one.
I think Garcia is a good player. I think he actually offers a little bit of a threat going forward as well. He's really good in the air, isn't he?
So, Sinclair as well, as we spoke about last week.
I think he plays for the reserves tonight, I think. Right. Making his first day. Get used to that one, Scott.
Yeah.
The elite development squad, I meant to say.
Is that right?
Yeah, not the reserves.
What about Newcastle, Pete? Let's talk about your man, Hatem Ben Arfa.
Mm. He was all right.
What a goal!
No, it was a lovely hit. Not with his left foot either. He's a bit of a left foot specialist, but that was a proper raker. It was a lovely bit of work. But I was really disappointed in Young Kabay. I don't know what's got into that lad the start of this season and the back end of last season as well. He just doesn't look like the same player. He just didn't seem that interested, apart from the free kick right at the end of the match.
Yeah, is it his head turned, is he, or something?
Well, either that or he was big on. I know, he's the most photogenic Newcastle player ever. But I think, you know, there's talk of him. He wanted his buddy Debussy to come and play, but they didn't manage to sign him.
So you think he's still sulking?
That is quite childish, though, when you think about it.
That is very childish. But, you know, who knows what's going on in that gorgeous head of his. But I just think that there is an argument to maybe consider dropping him, maybe bringing in Marvo, maybe teaching him to defend a little bit more. But
are you basically so enamoured with him, you're thinking of dumping him before he dumps you?
Yeah. I think that's kind
that
of. Yeah.
You're picking up the signs, aren't you?
Much.
Yeah. And you're right too.
Has he seen a lot more of his mates at the moment, Pete?
He's out all hours late. And sometimes he says weird things. Sometimes he doesn't even call me by my name, Peter.
Yeah. Because didn't he say to you the other day he didn't mind if you had sex with other people?
Yeah. He asked for an open relationship.
Let me stop it now.
Yeah.
Let me drag this away from emotional wrecks. Let's go to League One with Paolo Di Canio.
Can I just get a confirmation?
Yeah.
This is something that's been praying on my mind a little bit. Paolo Di Canio has never been wrong, has he?
No, of course he hasn't.
Apart from that tattoo, maybe.
No, he's never been
and
wrong.
And that whole Nazi salute thing.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
If you think he's been wrong, I think you're being unprofessional there.
Oh, okay. Right, I see.
Yeah.
What, taking the goalkeeper off after 23 minutes?
I wish the keeper had said, hang on, you're having a go at me for reacting badly to being subbed off. Is this what's actually happening?
I'm going to ironically push you over now.
Yeah.
And then you have to think about that.
That is naughty. I don't care how bad the keeper's been. It's taking him off after 23 minutes.
Yeah.
Young boy as well.
Oh, yeah, it's really, really harsh.
He started going on the mad rant about him being how short he was as a goalkeeper as well. Did you see that?
He needs to sort it out. He needs to grow. to make some effort and grow.
Yeah. He's not Chinese, that thing, right?
Well, that wasn't meant to be, to stop being racist.
Okay, sorry about
that. You're getting mixed up with Di Matteo.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
who is a Chinese peanut, we know.
Exactly.
Moving on.
I think that he said something along the lines of, oh, he needs to give me some respect. No one would touch him before I came along because he's 188 centimetres.
Didn't he say he was crappy as well?
Yeah, it was a very metric-specific rant, is what I'm saying. Which is nice to see.
Just sort of like, he was like, he never played professional football. And I was thinking, explain yourself out of a job here, fella. I am a liability. I basically did Ali Dai. Yeah.
But he didn't.
He's League One. No, is he Czech?
Yeah, that's what he said.
But he gets results, Di Canio.
He does.
That is so good.
Does get results.
He was sort of completely unjustified in his decision to take him off as well, because they ended up getting hammered, didn't they?
Yeah. But, you know, he reacted badly, then he kicked a water bottle over, stormed down the tunnel, wouldn't watch it. You know,
you would, though, because everyone was just laughing at him.
Of course you would.
21 minutes in, you know.
You know, Di Canio's, he's got to address it, isn't he?
Yeah, he had a fight with a player last season. He fell out of his captain earlier in this season, sold him to Birmingham, because he would it basically it was something along the lines of it was really because Canio was very vague about it. Something happened behind closed doors with his captain, which Di Canio basically explained away as, oh, he had a really bad change in attitude. All right, so he disagreed with something you said then, yeah, and you sold him. So no, I'm not disputing that he gets results and they got promoted last season, but they got pumped this weekend. So you've got to be careful.
There's a lot of money at the moment that you know around that club. So you know he can't keep spending forever.
All eyes on Swindon.
Yes.
Let's go up north to the SPL. Celtic dropped points at home to Hibs.
Told you, it's all to play for.
Motherwell won 4-1 against Inverness Cali, and they're top. Motherwell are here.
Go on, you steel men.
3 points separate first and ninth in the SPL. I know it's early days, but my goodness, that is exciting times.
Yeah, I mean, that is that's your dream coming true, isn't it?
The Hearts lost. They've lost at home against Dundee, but I tell you what, they had Anfield rocking. They're the three best minutes of the season.
Three best minutes you've ever had on Twitter as well.
I couldn't believe my luck when Rayner dropped that one. What was great as well is like the usual Twitter gag. After the game, I was like, such a shame for Hearts. I have it outplayed Liverpool over the two legs. People are going, well, I wouldn't say they've outplayed them. Piss off.
Flock.
You don't get me, do you?
Yeah. Hashtag.
But wasn't it glorious when the Hearts scored? They'd been taking an absolute battering, and then Rayner goes, go on then.
Here's your one.
Let's see what you're made of.
Mate of mine was at the game. He phoned me after, and he said he was like, "It's probably just as well it never went to extra time. I've got a teach in the morning." But how good were the Hearts fans when they scored? Like, and I thought to myself, they'll be on the pitch. And a few of them
doing the beating.
A few of them were over the hoardings, and one guy, he got quite far, but he got properly taken down. Yeah. Oh dear. So yeah, all going off again in the SPL.
So do you think there's been a bit of a hangover for them to lose at home to Dundee? It must be.
I tell you what though, you know, people used to go on about should Celtic and Rangers join the Premier League. Well, Hearts, if you look at their
they've
results,
they can mix it.
If you look at their results, they've drawn at Spurs.
Yeah,
they've drawn at Anfield.
Yeah, they're top six. Shoot him.
Get them on that train.
Yeah.
Very good, Jim. Give them a chance is what I'm saying. So anyway, the Scotland of the South, La Liga. Barcelona beat Valencia 1-0. Adriano with a peach. But it was the only thing that separated the sides that game.
Hatem Ben Arfa-esque.
It really was, actually. It really was, to be fair.
It was almost exactly the same goal.
Yeah. I'd say Ben Arfa's was slightly truer hit.
Yeah.
Actually, no, that's Adriano's was a great hit.
I'm sure he'll get over it.
Yeah.
It was a lovely little nudge.
Oh. Yeah.
Nudge. But Barcelona had a really good start. I know old Tito's had his disciplinary issues.
He has.
But they've started all right.
What do you think about Villanova? He doesn't strike me as the type of guy who's going to be in the job long for some reason.
I think it's just I think they just really wanted. It seemed to me there was sort of preparation within the club. They knew because of Guardiola's manner of not renewing contracts long term, and he was at Armin and Aaron for a while. I think they put stuff in place to have the sort of smoothest transition possible.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they think of him as a long term replacement or not. I suppose it depends how he gets on and whether he wants the job or not.
I think he'd be like Gale in Breaking Bad, if you're familiar with that character.
Yes.
At all.
Oh yeah, kinda okay, like yeah, yeah. Mm. You're quite sort of really, really up for it, quite friendly.
Yes.
Sort of a bit of a go getter, but also very sort of loyal.
Yes. That sort exactly. of thing. Yeah, no, a little bit too loyal.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'm thinking, you know, Guardiola's obviously a very media friendly chap. We remember him as a player, etc. Whereas Villanova, we don't, you know.
Yeah, these players know, and that's the main thing.
Exactly. I mean, Villanova was there, wasn't it? Obviously, they want to continue this era for as long as they can, and if that means promoting the number two, then great. Mm. I mean, if you've been charged with this side at Barcelona, you wouldn't want to change it much.
No, I admire how they kind of everybody shuffles up one.
He's already got a very, very good record. Yeah, he already.
And he said his eye poked out for the cause as well, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly. He's a soldier.
By Big Jose.
Yeah. Oh, that would be a fight. Because
that'd be on the Barca tapestry one day.
I hope they actually do have a proper fight, Mourinho and Villanova, because like Guardiola, he's too much of a gentleman, he'd never get involved in that.
But you're thinking sort of primetime telly, this one could go off.
Well, yeah, why not? We've had an eye gouge, for crying out loud.
That's a good start.
But don't forget, Guardiola, Villanova did play as well, he didn't play to the level of
Villanova. Yeah, sorry, but I'm saying he's not the... He's,
He's not the icon that Guardiola is.
But I mean, he's coached the B team and that sort of stuff.
Doesn't wear nice jumpers.
Guardiola hasn't coached. Guardiola only coached the B team, didn't he, before he took over the main team?
Nice jumpers.
Yeah, fair enough.
Real Madrid beat Granada 3-0. Ronaldo scored 2 and Higuain got 1. Cristiano Ronaldo, he's a bit sad at the moment.
It was the anniversary of his father's death recently, wasn't it?
So, but he didn't.
A lot of people are speculating that that's why.
Oh, is that right? Well, he said it wasn't for personal reasons. He said it was professional reasons.
But then I think he's alluding to the fact that they wouldn't allow him time off, so that personal issue has then become professional. I don't really know. Who knows?
Okay. I did find it funny how in one of the articles it said that his feelings had nothing to do with losing out to Andres Iniesta for best player, the UEFA European player of the season.
I don't think even Ronaldo would get in a sulk about that.
I just find it a bit, this
seems to be like a bit of a media driven agenda.
Yeah, very much.
This
so.
Happened in the Euros with when he apparently was taunted by people chanting about Messi, and then someone else, a newspaper or a TV network, said something about Ronaldo and Messi not shaking hands or avoiding each other in quotes after the Spanish Super Cup. But I've not seen. I know Messi doesn't talk that much to the press, but I've not seen anyone, either of them, say anything about this.
Surely they'd have to. They both have to seek each other out anyway. They're in different dressing rooms, getting on different coaches, going back to different.
No,
places.
But they crossed over after the game.
Right.
They basically shook hands with the referee, and Ronaldo shook hands with the referee or one of the assistants, and Messi did the same. And they sort of crossed over, but they didn't see each other. They didn't look at each other.
Right.
And so, it's one of those things though, Jim, where it possibly could be something in it. But if you were really looking for an agenda, you go, I didn't even make eye contact.
Well, Ronaldo generates headlines, doesn't he? Exactly. Ronaldo being angry and possibly leaving Real Madrid, which is what it's obviously leading to and is in some places already done so. That's, you know, it sells newspapers.
I did feel sorry for Ronaldo. You know, he's saying, look, I'm a bit upset. I don't want to share it with you why I'm upset, because he doesn't have to empty the contents of his own head. And immediately the journalists will be going, is this because...
Gay! He's gay!
Is this because of Iniesta winning the award that you never won?
No! Piss off!
I'm quite good at this.
Yeah.
Bloody hell, fine.
But the Bison. Big Michael Essien.
Michael Essien, yeah. Is teaming up with Jose once again.
That is a shrewd bit of business.
Chelsea don't want any defensive midfield players,
do they? I don't think so.
They've got Romeo, who doesn't seem to be in favour of the Di Matteo, and they've got Mikel, who's, you know, not really blossomed into the player we thought he would. And they've got Morelos, they're talking about selling to Fenerbahce.
Morelos isn't even really what you call a defensive midfielder.
No, he's Ramirez is possibly the biggest sort of box-to-box. He can play defensive midfielder.
Oscar's
a creative player.
That's why I'm scared about the fact that we haven't seen Cheick Tiote for a little while. Because he's always linked.
Well, you've got the window closed then. The only reason Morelos can move to Turkey is because their window doesn't close for another week or something.
But I think, you know, Chelsea, as we've said before on the show, that they're trying to do a sort of their own tiki-taka thing. Maybe they're, you know, trying to have it so they only have a couple of midfielders that do that.
Well, what happens though, Chelsea play against teams who aren't as good and they win relatively easily and they've started the season off well. You know, as I'm sure you're about to come on to, they play Atletico Madrid with a decent attacking unit.
I get
overrun. The only thing I can think of is that Lampard maybe will go deeper in his older age.
It's not
ideal, is it?
What about Falcao?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Radamel. What a name.
Yeah.
He's an absolute beast. I mean, it's funny, isn't he? Has he won back-to-back Europa Leagues? He's certainly won two of them anyway.
Yeah.
You just think to yourself, are Atleti going to get into the Champions League? Because it's where he... But then maybe he loves it there.
He's only just moved there, really.
I mean, he's 25, 26?
Maybe they'll swap him for Torres one day.
But Falcao's not been at Atletico Madrid long, has he?
No, he hasn't, no.
And it was a strange move from anywhere, because he had his pick, didn't he, really?
Yeah. That's right. Well, he was in Portugal, and obviously wanted to get into La Liga. But maybe he's one of those players who's better being a big fish in a so-called smaller pond.
It's a lovely night out against Chelsea. Monaco.
Maybe he's just happy, lads. All right.
Let's get off his back.
Let's stop trying to get him transferred.
Well, we're going to leave Spain.
But how do you think, seriously, just going back to it really quickly, how do you think Chelsea will set up against a City in the league?
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. Maybe Big JT will step up.
I'm loving it because it'll be about 6-5.
It'll be great.
Serie A. Udinese were beaten 4-1 by Juventus. Nicholas Bender.
Yeah, they were murdered by them. And then Juventus conceded one of the most boneheaded goals I've ever seen. Proper like park stuff, like pass it across your goalkeeper sort of thing. But Juventus look just scintillating.
Well, they're going to look even better because Nicholas Bender's moved there for one year alone. Yeah.
That's why the players are stepping up.
They think, oh, our shirt's not guaranteed in any position. You can play anywhere.
Yeah. Well, Bender said, I hope we'll have great times together. I want to
fulfil my potential here.
And can the world handle that?
I don't know. And show the fans my absolute best is still yet to come. I'm sure I will.
You can imagine him reading the papers, the Juventus players reading the papers, reading that Bent is about to come to Juve, and it says here, he's the best player in the world. Who says that? Don't say.
They wanted Van Persie, they got Bentner. Yeah. It's got to be disappointing.
Oh, yeah, they did.
My absolute best is yet to come. My absolute best arrogance is yet to come. My finest work.
Well, if he said to me, my absolute best is yet to come, I'd say, I fucking hope so.
It almost certainly is, to be fair.
I'm going
to
write off a lot of cars.
Well, he nearly went to Siena, which I think would have probably been a more sensible move. They claimed they were very close to a deal with him, and then as soon as Bentner learned of Juve's interest, that was the end of that. But I did like the Siena sports director. He said it was an almost impossible deal to sign Bentner, obviously. He said, we had an agreement for all, both with the player and Arsenal, but when the player understood of Juve's interest, he phoned us to say he was going there. He always acted correctly.
I think that's nice to read. I mean
not like Fiorentina and Berbatov.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Gordon Bennett,
they were gutted about that.
They were well pissed off.
The decision with Bentner is whether he wants to go, and Juventus is always going to be a big pull for him. They're a big team, but if he had a chance to be a real legend at Siena, if he plays every week and starts scoring goals,
I think he's too young to care about that sort of thing.
Maybe, yeah, that's probably true. Yeah,
but yeah, on Juventus, I think it's impressive that they played so well, given that Conte is banned from the touchline. It's not really seeming to affect them that badly.
Well, yeah, we spoke about this last week, didn't we? Would they struggle? And we talked about Milan maybe not having enough, and then they go and beat Bologna 3-1 rather, and Pizzini scores a hat-trick.
It's so mental, the Pizzini-Cassano thing.
I saw the Bologna-Milan game, and the defending
Diamante for Bologna.
Yeah, it's a great pen. He obviously scored the decisive penalty against England in the Euros, didn't he? But the defending, and I mean, Milan's first goal, the Pizzini penalty.
Yeah.
Defender, it was almost like if you put a video together for kids about how not to defend. Got the wrong side, grabbed his shirt, fell over, took him down. it was like one thing after another. Pizzini couldn't believe it.
What about Pizzini's third, though? It was like ball in the box. Go on, then. Good.
It's a great finish, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, lovely. But with defenders, though.
It's terrible. But the thing was, even the other end with Diamante's penalty, as Jim just alluded to, Nocerino, it was a dreadful challenge.
Yeah.
He was like looking the other way, swinging a wild leg on the edge of the penalty area.
We spoke about Roma last week and said, could they perhaps mount an attack on the Scudetto? And winning 3-1 away to Inter is a fantastic result.
Yeah, the Inter fans put a banner up for Zeman, the Roma manager, didn't they? Basically thanking him for all his good work against corruption in Italian football and stuff.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Wow. In fact, because Zeman's like a real good guy of like football in terms of fighting against corruption, stuff like
that's
that.
That's great.
And the Inter fans put a little banner up for him, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, and then he smashed him.
Yeah.
He's probably a bit annoyed about it.
Thanks very much. Yeah. Totti with two assists. The evergreen Francesco Totti.
And gotta be loving that Totti, Destro, Osvaldo front three.
Of course we are.
Lovely.
We've said many, many times about how strange it is that Italian players seem to move clubs to their rivals, and it's not a problem. But I've been thinking about this today. Do you think it's just because, you know, over here, players might think twice about that because the fans would go absolutely mental. But in Italy, it's absolutely guaranteed that for some reason, at some point, the fans are going to go absolutely mental about something.
Yeah.
So you might as well just accept it and do it.
I guess we'd have ultras.
Either
friends close.
He'll be back at some point, so don't worry about it. Yeah. He's always moving, so he'll be back.
Cassano, can you say open his account? It was a very lucky one.
I didn't see that one.
Deflection.
He claimed it. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be the man to try and take it off him.
Yeah, he'll do that. He's an Inter fan, isn't he? So when he realised they wanted him, he was off.
Off he went. Across town.
But it was a straight swap, wasn't it? I don't think there was any money involved.
Not sure.
There was money involved.
Pizzini's been largely woeful for a year or so, but he's always decent when he joins a new club. It seems to me that he just needed a move. He scored two on his debut for Inter, and he scored a hat-trick on his full debut this time.
And it's now time to talk about a former Milan great. Because we're going to go to League One, and it's Lille 1, Paris Saint-Germain 2.
By which you mean League
2. Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah.
They beat Lille 2-1.
Two great goals from Zlatan.
Two great goals. Yeah. I'll tell you what, the second goal from Zlatan, I've never seen him run like that for so long.
Mm. That won't last.
Well.
He's like done it now. Like a lovely, done his running.
Like a lovely gazelle.
Like a horrible gazelle. Like a really arrogant gazelle.
He was absolutely fantastic, and they've won 2-1. Finally, they've got a win. We're getting a little bit worried for them. We're enjoying it. But Marseille won 3-1. They're top. 12 points. They've got so an excellent start.
And, and Barton to come. Things finally get better.
Yeah, they'll have at least 15 by the end of the season. Yeah. Elsewhere in France, Montpellier won 3-1 away, which was a better result for them. They haven't had a great start to the season, but their owner, Louis Lulu Nicolin, said before the game, their start to the season, he said, "I'm disappointed. You can always turn round a bad start if you have smart players. But three quarters of mine are morons, so that won't work."
Oh, God. Won't work. Won the league last season.
Won't work.
Yeah. Won the title.
No, this man needs to be hooked up with Gigi Becali and to just put the world to rights together.
Yeah. It would be an atom bomb like explosion.
Mm. A team that won the league last season, and he dyed his hair blue and yellow at the age of about 70, and they're the morons.
Half of them are morons.
Yeah, no, three quarters.
They've got a majority, yeah.
Sochaux are largely terrible as well. Yeah. They had a dreadful start.
Yeah. Well,
half empty stadium. Before. Don't see you having a go at them, Luke.
Sorry about that. Can't get everyone, Jim. I've got to be very specific.
Before we get on to one of our favourite features, we've got to go to Thailand. Because former England boss, Sven-Goran Eriksson.
There he is.
He's back in work. Oh, yes. He's a new technical director at Thai club Tero Sasana.
Can you hear the joy in your voice as you've gone up an octave.
Put your feet up, Sven.
How many just hotels do you reckon that man has been in? I can't imagine.
Oh, he's 64.
Yeah. He's loving it. He's loving it.
He's like, am I down to my last 5 million? Better get another job.
Someone said on Twitter today, "Oh, what's the matter, Sven? Can't you get like big club jobs anymore? Yeah, you have to go to Thailand." Are you mad? He's loving it. Yeah. You can't believe it.
No pressure.
Yeah. Well, apparently Dietmar Hamann wrote in his autobiography that Sven wanted a few years more to manage, so that would have been a couple of years ago, I'd imagine, before moving to Thailand to go and live with two beautiful women, apparently. Hamann said, Eriksson said to him on a pre-season tour of Thailand, "You know, Didi, I like this place. I think I will manage for another 5 years and come back here and live with two women. Yes, I think I need two beautiful women."
He's brilliant.
Amazing.
With regards to how long
Sven... Sexy Uncle Sven.
Balding smoothie. Yeah. With regards to how long he will be in Thailand, Ericsson's agent, Athol Still. Why are all the people involved with Sven got great names? Like Hans Back and Athol Still. Yeah. Superb. He said, "It's an open-ended contract. It could be very short-term." Very short-term.
Until they've basically given him a house and can't get out of it.
"I like my contracts like I like my women."
Yeah. I have two of them.
Oh, dear. It's painfully good. Yeah. It really is. Oh, dear. Now, while I've just finished up about Sven, if you pardon the expression, Luke's gone off. I think he's in Diego Corner.
Yeah, I thought I'd give you all an update.
Here we go. We haven't had this for a while. Obviously, nice. Being the close season.
Still, yeah.
Another man who knows how to find money.
Yeah. Well, me or Diego? I can assure you I don't. Diego's obviously been out of work for a while, so he's not much has been going on. He's just been recharging his battery.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is a euphemism for some recreational drug use. allegedly. So there was talk of him being linked to a couple of jobs in China, because obviously Drogba and Anelka have gone there, and so there was talk that it might become the new footballing sort of powerhouse, and Diego wanted to be at the vanguard of that.
Yeah, but, it's definitely that.
But it's not going to happen, because apparently all the offers he got for coaching have been unsatisfactory, in his words. So he's accepted the job as an ambassador. That's a perfect job for Diego. He's loving that. That's what Sven wants to get
set in a good example.
Diego should ring Sven. You want to get some of this ambassador stuff. It's really easy with the Dubai Sports Council. So what he's going to do is he's going to resolve his dispute with Al Wasl, apparently.
He's going to stay exactly where he is and do less work.
And he actually says, "Dubai Sports Council and I have discussed a few ideas, and they are serious about upgrading the sports sector in Dubai. For those who think that I have fallen down or I have collapsed, I'm stronger now."
All right, Emperor.
And he also said, little sort of a chilling insight into what it's like to be Diego. "I used to not sleep at all, and it's really hectic and tiring. For me, I would like to live more years. I would like to retire or relax for some time." Him and Sven, I just want a sitcom.
Yeah. I mean, is he a good ambassador? He always just destroys everyone he's with. Just openly, publicly slates them. He's just going to start ripping the shit out of them. Yeah. I cannot wait.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I like to think he heard ambassador. He likes salty meat.
Yeah.
Not in Dubai.
Not in Dubai.
Come
not
on.
In Dubai, you're right.
You get away with it, man.
Right, I think it's time for a game, isn't it, Peter?
Right. Are you ready, gents?
Yep. What's it called?
Yeah.
It's called Jason Ewell Betts. Hey!
Very good. One that sometimes I think I catch myself every so often thinking, what if he lets me down with a name? He won't.
Never. Especially because a lot of people have sent me some brilliant ones. Yeah. Which I will fully credit. Upon my arrival to Major League Soccer, who am I, by the way, in the summer of 1999, I declared my intention to become the Dennis Rodman of MLS.
Stop. Danny Dicchio?
No.
Instead of stop, you've got to say you'll bet.
Okay, you'll bet. Darren Huckabee.
No.
Oh, good guess.
He's synonymous with the MLS, isn't he?
Because he scored that one goal.
Yeah.
According to the internet, they got us all the time.
I once punched a rapper in the face on the telly.
Oh, that's a good...
You've got it, haven't you?
No, I think I have.
In my country, I'm known as Jana.
You'll bet. Is it JJ Okocha?
No. It is
not. We've already had it, haven't we? Yeah. Mm.
Yes, we have.
You'll bet. Name, though, to be fair.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't really
You'll bet.
Say.
Is it... Robert Yarny?
No, it's
just
not.
Just because it sounds like Yarny.
Good.
I like it.
I won Celebrity Big Brother in 2007.
Didn't watch it.
Well, yeah,
it's not in our country.
Oh, stop. No.
You'll bet.
Yeah.
Is it Sasa Cercic?
It is Sasa Cercic.
Oh, yeah!
That's excellent.
Get in, Jimbo.
When did he punch a rapper?
Again, on a Serbian television show.
I remember certifiable and mental.
Yeah, Chris Camaro once called me a Serbian George Best. I once said the following, I would not sign for another club, but not even if I was offered $15 million. However, it would be different if they were to instead offer me 15 different women from all around the world. I would tell the club chairman, please let me make these women happy. I will satisfy them like they have never been satisfied before.
Keep it to yourself, maybe, eh?
Goodness me.
Sven in the making.
Goodness me.
Sasa Cercic. Remember he had that little sort of plaited beard at one point as well?
Yeah.
Didn't he...
Fu Manchu sort of deal, wasn't it? Yeah.
Didn't he have some sort of protest at
Selhurst
Park
once
as well?
He did, yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Well done. Good protest knowledge. And now it's time for a profile, ladies and gentlemen.
Yay.
Profile time, as it's known.
Now... We've done some profiles before. And,
loads
you know,
of them.
They're
on the website.
They are at thefootballramble.com. We've done some which mean some to others. You know, Jim, if there's maybe an Arsenal player we've done, it means a lot. Luke, Robert Prozinecki meant a lot to you. This is all about Pete Donaldson today, ladies and gentlemen, because we are doing the entertainers. It's the Newcastle United team of the mid-90s.
Oh.
It's Pete's youth going into the dwarf.
You shouldn't have. the entertainers.
Asprilla has got through here. 39! 1-1!
Oh, he's dropped it again, the goalkeeper here, Junilar. And it's Junilar!
Steve Howe, one of the many internationals on view tonight. Still Gillespie. And Ferdinand! The marking didn't look too good on the header. That's sneaked in from Steve Howe. Glenn Hoddle, take note.
Peter.
Pete. It's all over the chair.
Pete, this is happening.
Do carry on, Marcus. Yeah.
It's Kevin Keegan's original Newcastle United.
You mean Sheedy, Kilcline, Alan, Guppy and Matthew?
Well, that's the main ones, yeah.
Scott Sellers, Marcus.
Mark Hottinger.
Paul Bracewell.
Kitson, I believe.
Yeah, Paul Kitson, he was in there as well. Yeah. They had other strikers, I believe.
Gavin Peacock, top scorer in the promotion season.
One of the finest monk footballers ever.
Do you remember
Darren Peacock as well?
Yeah.
Do you remember Kilcline?
Yeah,
I remember the name.
Alexi Lalas. We like
people
it,
say I look like him. Yeah.
Oh yeah,
the
moustache
and the blonde. Yeah.
Brilliant,
Pete. Here we go.
Yeah.
Strap yourself in, Pete. Keep all hands and feet inside the vehicle.
This is your life.
Pull your trousers down, pal, because we're off. Now, in the period of 1992 to 1997, I think that's fair, it was around that time.
Well, that's Keegan's
yeah.
era, isn't it?
It really was an incredible time for Newcastle United, and just full of excitement and goals and things going on.
Not a lot of defending.
No.
There's a lot of bombing on.
Full of excitement, and that's just Keegan's hair and coat.
The entertainment included a lot of slapstick as well, it's fair to say.
Well, I mean, I suppose... You know, Newcastle had a number of flair players leading up to that era, you know, throughout the 80s. They did have the likes of Keegan himself and Beardsley, Waddle, Gascoigne, not at the same time. That would have been absolutely incredible. Yeah. But into the 90s, you know, they were managed by Ozzy Ardiles. And one for attacking football as well, laying the foundation. But he,
the Martinez and Rogers.
Martinez and Keegan. That's it. I mean, it didn't work out too well for our dealers for a number of reasons, to be fair.
Chiefly that he wasn't a very good manager.
Well, when he was sacked, they were bottom of the old second division, now the Championship. The club were in financial ruin, and the Magpie group of Sir John Hall, Freddie Shepherd, Freddie Fletcher and co were heavily involved in getting that club back on its feet. And Freddie Fletcher, of course, died
recently.
Very recently,
last week.
Only at the age of 71, I think. So I did like this, how Sir John Hall and Freddie Shepherd were saying, you know, they were the money men, and the real driving force behind the Newcastle United revolution in the early 90s was Freddie Fletcher, or the Rottweiler, he was called around the club. He was, as you could imagine, a fierce Scotsman. Freddie Shepherd said at the time, because they were talking about getting Keegan involved, they thought this would be amazing. You know, we need the club getting back. We're in the doldrums.
Rock bottom,
this is terrible stuff, so we need to get some finances in here, and who better to get this up and running on the pitch, you know.
But they're in serious danger of going to the third.
They were indeed. But I think when a club's like that, you need, it's not so much about tactics, it's more about motivation, it's more about a bit of confidence.
And bums on seats as well.
Yeah, and Keegan, you know, does all that, or he certainly did. I love this quote from Freddie Shepherd. He said, "At the time, Kevin was in Marbella playing golf with showbiz people like Sean Connery every day, but Freddie Fletcher persuaded him off his own back to come into football."
He'd not managed before, Eddie Keegan.
Yeah, no. And I mean, it, but that's it, though.
They just assumed he would be what he genuinely did go on to be.
But isn't it, that was the start of it.
Yeah.
That was the start. Keegan was playing golf in Spain. They went along
with Sean Connery for some reason.
Well, Connery was living in southern Spain at the time.
Well, if I went to Spain, I wouldn't just end up playing golf for Sean Connery, would I?
Kevin Keegan.
No.
You've never left a professional football pitch in a helicopter.
All right, you've got the
stop
hair.
Stop rubbing it
not
in.
Kevin Keegan.
I've been punched in the lay-by, but I'm not Kevin Keegan.
You fall off a bike at high speed, but you're not Kevin Keegan.
I so would love it if we beat them, but
look, you've had the Keegan profile.
You've said it again.
You had the Keegan profile to get it all out, all right, and you had a bit of a go at Les Fernand, I should recall. So I'll not have this. I will not have you spoil this.
He will not have it.
A little trip down memory lane, Pete. That's
Pete, you're up against it. And whatever you do, don't shoot the messenger. In all seriousness, that's where it started. You know, Keegan was you know, putting in Spain with Connery and. And then it would go to the point of very close to winning the Premiership or the Premier League Premiership.
But within 2 seasons.
Yeah.
Well, this is it. This is how. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? You remember those times and they were great. They really were. But doing the profile, I just thought, blimey, it was that simple. They were down. Keegan came along. They pumped a bit of money in there, and my giddy aunt, they nearly were the best team in the country.
It was a lot of money, to be fair.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a lot of money, but
Scott Sellers was something like £900,000, and he was a player who played a lot.
It's not Roman Abramovich money or Manchester City.
No, at the time,
it was a fair whack, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Supposed to be bigging him up here.
Yeah, all right, well, it was a foregone conclusion. You know, hellfire.
If anything, I'm annoyed I didn't do more.
But maybe the amount of money they outlaid as well was entertaining, and it was.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Because it wasn't our money.
Yeah. So Keegan from southern Spain goes straight to Newcastle in February 1992 and saves the club from relegation. He went about getting them into the top flight and did so the following year.
Yeah, they were good that year as well. I remember, as I've said to you before, just then, Peacock, top scorer. So they were a good team. Then.
Wasn't Andy Cole like prolific for them in the
He was a goal machine.
Second division.
But if you look at some like a signing such as like Rob Lee, Keegan was instrumental in getting him into the club because, you know, he came from Charlton, not for a huge amount of money, but he wanted to be quite close to London, and he basically explained to Rob Lee that Newcastle is closer to London than Manchester is. It isn't.
No, yeah.
It clearly isn't. But
I wonder if Keegan actually thinks that. That might have been what convinced him.
It's before the internet, so no one knows what's true and what isn't. So it's impossible to tell.
That is right. So they get into the Premier League or the Premiership, and in the 93-94 season, their first time back in the top flight for a little while, they finished third.
Yeah,
that
unbelievable,
is breathtaking. Yeah, that really is.
It just, you know, Andy Cole, Peter Beardsley.
Doesn't Cole still hold the record for the most goals scored in the season? Is that right?
For
Premier League. Didn't he get like 42?
I think he got 41 in all competitions.
Right. Yeah.
He got 34 in the league.
It was a phenomenal effort, basically, the way you look at it, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So they finished third, their highest finish since, I think, 1927, when they last won the league, you know. But they played a real passing attacking game, which so many people loved to watch and admired, and they became a lot of people's second team, you know.
Yeah, and there were loads and loads of kids around my way in Essex who had Newcastle shirts.
Yeah, exactly. Same in Edinburgh, you know.
They were popular where in my school as well. I mean, very much so, around that sort of time.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was the McEwen's Lager kits. Mm. Yeah. They were, it was more the...
And later the Nuki Brown one as well.
Yeah, that was when it really...
When did they sign Big Philippe Albert? That's what we want to talk about. Like being punched by a giant marshmallow.
Well, we haven't mentioned Peter Beardsley.
No, yeah.
Who had a fantastic partnership with Andy Cole. He got him back from Everton, De Keegan, for I think $1.5 million.
A shrewd move, that, actually.
Mm. Yeah,
he should never
have
left the club, to be
fair.
Yeah,
exactly. Bringing back a real good PR coup for the club. Mm. He's obviously a local lad.
Beardsley and Cole up front. I mean, Cole was, I think he was PFA Young Player of the Year. He was top scorer, as we said. Beardsley got 25 as well. I mean, Cole with 34 and Beardsley with 25 in the league.
But, this wasn't even the entertainers.
This is
even more entertaining.
Yeah.
Like the big thing, the most telling phrase, the most telling sort of saying, kind of anecdote I can sort of remember from the time was that Kevin Keegan once shouted at John Beresford to do some defending, a fullback, and Beresford told him to fuck off. So Keegan,
there any other manager in the world that would take that?
Well, Keegan subbed him off. Like Beresford always sort of goes back and sort of says that the one manager that always holds grudges was Kevin Keegan, and he'd always, "You going to tell me to fuck off, are you again, John?" Yeah. No, yeah.
That's good. Keegan was a sensitive chap.
The two strikers have scored 59 league goals between them, and we've not got into the entertainers yet.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if Beardsley was league goals.
Okay, well, you know what I mean.
But they scored an absolute hatful.
The Beardsley shimmy, right in front of the Crystal Palace ground, where the end was not built yet, and it was just massive hoardings. Yeah. Nobody could sit there.
Oh,
lovely.
Delish. And then, of course, they signed Philippe Albert, the big Belgian centre-back.
The great thing about Philippe Albert, right, and Pete, I know you could probably talk about him all day, he's about 6'10". He's massive. He's taller than me. I think he's about 6'3", Philippe Albert.
And we'll talk about his deft touch in a bit.
He was solid, but he could caress the ball like nobody's business. Yeah. For a player, you know...
In a bit.
Yeah, okay.
The most exciting parts of Colaccini's game are the parts that remind me of Philippe Albert.
So we move in to the 94-95 season. It's still not quite there yet, really. And that was when Manchester United paid $6 million for Andy Cole and Keith Gillespie, who was rated about £1 million.
Do you remember the furore? Do you remember Keegan remonstrating on the steps at St. James's Park with the fans, sort of going, "Don't worry, you know, it'll get better."
I've got a plan.
What's the plan?
That was an outrageous signing.
It was huge.
Huge.
But do you remember how much Keith Gillespie was rated, though? I thought £1 million. He was rated at £1 million by Manchester United, which I thought was very low.
I don't know if this is apocryphal, but you hear quite a lot that it would have been Beckham had both been English.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I mean, Andy Cole, his best days...
He scores a goal, Marcus.
His best days were at Newcastle, really. Would you not...
No.
As in his best playing days, would you not say?
He obviously won more at United, but his most prolific...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It was quite a short period. It was only a couple of years, so I don't know how much you can sort of read into that. But yeah, he certainly seemed to miss a lot more for Manchester United.
We probably got more chances. But still, though, that's...
That was his thing, wasn't it? He'd just get five chances in a game, easily, just from his own movement.
That was the old sort of thing, wasn't it? But so Newcastle finished sixth that year. But in the close season, they signed Sir Les Ferdinand and Davy Ginola.
Mm.
And it all went off from there.
What do we need? What more sort of flair players, really?
Yeah. What do we need? A winger who won't track back?
Yeah.
The sort of player who, when he retires, will open a vineyard like David Ginola actually has.
Winger who won't only not track back. He's actually in exile from the national team for not doing so.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, Sir Les Peter.
He's already in the demon.
He's
easily my favourite footballer on this planet.
Was it the 95-96 season where he scored in the first eight games of the season for them?
I believe so, yeah.
Because they kept winning, didn't they? And especially at home, they looked unstoppable. You thought they're always going to win at home. They're not even a draw. And I think that it was
absolute steamroller teams. It was ridiculous.
I think they played, was it Liverpool? And it was 1-1, and Liverpool were obviously you know, title contenders in early parts of the seasons back then. And, you know, and, that's actually a touch house.
Everything changed.
Halcyon days.
No, they were in there for the first sort of 6 months or so, but... I think it was Liverpool. They played them at St James's Park, and this was reasonably early in the season, and it was 1-1. And I remember just thinking, they're not going to drop points, surely. And lo and behold, Steve Watson pops up with a winner in with the last minute, and you think, yeah, there you go. Even you get out of jail. It's Manchester United-esque.
That was the nice sort of thing about it. There was also that sort of backbone of Lee Clark, Steve Watson, who were sort of local lads who were kind of like the support network for that sort
Steve
of thing.
Howie, before. Was that top
Steve
later?
Howie, yeah, Steve Howie, okay. Steve Howie. I used to play in sort of
big paving goal,
but there was a lot of local lads, yeah. And that was a great thing. You know, you had a few.
Keegan signed Shaka Hislop, which is quite exciting from Reading. Yeah. Yeah. That was a fair whack of money as well. That was over a million, I think.
And this was the season where they just tore it up. You know,
it's the famous 4-3 Anfield season.
Well, that was in the second half of the season, but in the first half of the season, it was just ridiculous. You know, we hadn't seen the likes of it. You know, people from our generation,
especially where it was a team everyone loved. You know,
that's right.
You would see Man United dicking on teams before, but people used to, it's easy to forget how much everyone hated Man United in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't really much competition, really. Well, the competition would always change.
And in this season, because this is the season they went miles ahead, isn't it?
Yes. Mm.
And the thing was, the other thing that's never really sort of mentioned, I'm sure you've got the specifics there, Mark, is that United's run-in. They were amazing. They won every single game to pip Newcastle. It wasn't like Newcastle did drop points and obviously they got overhauled, but United were ruthless. What's his name in No Country for Old Men? They're just relentlessly hunting him down. Mm. Never dropped points, won every single game almost.
Yeah. Also, as well, I think when Newcastle were 12 points clear, I think.
In January.
They had I think United had a game in hand on them. So it was,
It was effectively 9, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In January.
Still, yeah.
Yeah, but on that side of it, though.
Mind you could argue that about Manchester City, I think, last season.
But Jim sort of touched on it here about how United were disliked because they won everything, and that very much was the sort of mood of the time. But the reason I loved Newcastle in that season, obviously as an outsider living on the South Coast and I had no particular affiliation to them, was just that football was becoming at that stage, I was like 15 or 16 at the time, football was becoming quite a cynical, heavily marketed, sponsorship endorsed game. And Newcastle really did symbolise this sort of youthful exuberance and entertainment.
It was right at the right stuff, wasn't it?
It was almost something quite innocent about it, wasn't it?
Because
was great to watch.
That's Keegan all over.
Well, no, but it was the whole, you know, the famous sort of cliche about them was that they were just outscore the opposition because they would always concede.
Well,
you
Anfield
knew you'd be in for
example.
A brilliant game.
But they came, I mean, I don't know, I can't remember the specifics, but they came undone at Anfield, didn't they?
Well,
that was really the tipping point.
Well, they lost, people forget, they lost at Old Trafford 2-0.
Yeah,
and okay. I think that's when the gap was put back to 9 or maybe with the game in hand, so it could have been 6. But, it, you know, in January they were very far ahead and people were just like, well, is it over, you know, which was incredible. And then Tino Asprilla turned up to join the party. and he was great, but Keegan lobbing on another striker. Yeah. Was it just a bit too much?
It was at the behest of the team.
Well, no, it wasn't that much of a gap, and it wasn't about Tino Asprilla in the slightest. I think there's one sort of pivotal moment that people always sort of talk about where I think Tino lost the ball or something and the other team scored. And it's like, that's one goal. That's one goal in a million
of
other.
Course.
And like you said, the running for Manchester United, they steamrolled teams 10 times in a row or something like that to get that.
Well, when it started to change, it was the game at Anfield. And that very...
But do you remember the resilience of the Newcastle team to keep on going at them, you know what I mean?
I think
Liverpool as well. But do you remember like Les Fernandes turn and shot? And,
yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, they went 2-1 up, didn't they? It was 1-0 Liverpool. I mean, they call it the greatest game in the history of the Premier League.
Yeah, it was. It was different. And the following season, there was the same result, wasn't it?
There was, yeah. It wasn't quite as good a game,
but
it's still.
But one thing I would say, just to expand on what Pete said, you know, this thing about Asprilla losing the ball, I don't actually remember that point, but the overall point should be that if you've got that much of a lead, and everyone takes responsibility if you don't win. It's not hinged on one moment.
No.
Everyone, there's so many opportunities after that from so many different players to put that right. They didn't do that.
And
you can't scapegoat one person for that.
And there's so many sort of images from that season that I remember, like Tino turning up at the ground and it was snowing. And he was in a big woolen coat or something.
That's right.
And I remember.
Was that a puffer jacket?
Like, yeah. It was
something just that looked really weird.
Was it a big rom? Was it a big rom?
It was a statement that he was cold.
Yeah. I remember standing outside at St James's Park and this three lasses grabbing all of Shaka Hislop. I remember seeing Pavel Cernicek really early on, and it was clear that Pav wasn't playing because he was up in the stands with his little daughter dressed in a suit, and Shaq Hislop come out of his car and these three lasses like grabbed hold of Shaq Hislop's bum and he's going, oh, he's proper lushy, he's like and he's going, alright, calm down now. It's a lovely bit of work.
Oh, oh man,
when you could touch a footballer,
when you could touch a footballer without him hating you. Yeah. What was it? But like the mood up in Newcastle must have been incredible.
Well, you know, I had that season. I remember I had half a season ticket because I managed to.
Was it first half or second half?
Set fire to the other half.
It was the second half. Actually, it was, no,
but still,
yeah,
though,
nobody had seen anything like that before.
I mean, yeah, you know, I just, but this was it though.
Or
again,
since, there's not been a team that's, you know. No, but
I mean, you look at like Gillespie, Fernand, Ginola, Tino, Shearer, and Beardsley would play in the same team.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Shearer was a season later.
A little bit later, yeah, a little bit later on. Like, well, if you, well,
yeah,
sure, we'll go on,
yeah,
to the,
of course we will, yeah,
to the 5-0, but you know,
but this is
what we all came here to talk about.
Yeah, but this is again, I stress that Keegan wasn't in management. Newcastle were bottom of the old second division, yeah, and suddenly, in a matter of a couple of years or a few years, they're top of the Premiership. And looking odds on for it.
But it wasn't like Blackburn, where it was kind of like a bit of a slipshod, kind of rough, kind of a set of rough diamonds in certain,
yeah,
parts. You know, there was money spent, obviously.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a fluke how they won the league to a certain extent.
Yeah.
To a large extent, in fact. And even the players, you know, talk about that as like Tim Schoeller and sort of saying, we didn't think we were ever going to win that.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah, yeah.
Because they just seemed to, but everything fall into place. But with Newcastle, they did it with such flair and panache, and they're enjoyable to watch and just, you know. And they didn't defend. It was just,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
fun.
But it was the game, wasn't it, where Manchester United went to St James's Park, and everyone thought, if Newcastle win this, it's over. Yeah. The league's, yeah, over.
Coins.
And the game started, and Newcastle were the better side. Schmeichel pulled off a couple of decent saves. Mm. You know, Ferdinand going close, and they just couldn't get through. And it got to half time, and you thought, hang on a minute here. And I think had Newcastle have scored, it's all ifs and buts, of course. But had Newcastle have scored. But they didn't, and it was that suddenly you saw that look in Ferguson's eye, and there was Cantona, and they scored to make it 1-0. Oh, hang on. And the game finished, and everybody just knew there's something more left, yeah, in this league, you know. And that was the moment, really. And then, of course, they went to Anfield, and then when Stan Collymore scored that goal, and Keegan, you see him behind the holding board,
just deflate.
Oh yeah, he deflated.
And
he,
that, yeah,
like he'd been punched in a lay-by.
And then there was the other game I remember. They went to Nottingham. Shut up. And they went to Nottingham.
Luke just thumbs up because he's fucking 12.
Is it Campbell, more Keegan, Gutierrez?
Pete,
leave him be.
And they went to the City Ground to play Nottingham Forest. A game they would have probably won, yeah, by 3 or 4, and they drew 1-1. And that was when Manchester United.
Is Brian Roy playing that much?
Ian Wone scored the equaliser. Lovely goal it was.
Bloody 15, Ian Duane.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. And suddenly Manchester United, they got in front. And on the last day of the season, you know, United needed to win against Middlesbrough away. And Newcastle didn't beat Tottenham at home. And they won the league, I think, by 4 points. And it was such a shame, wasn't it?
They love it.
Well, we had the, you know, I will love it if we beat them and all that kind of scenario. And Ferguson's mind games worked a treat.
Well, the, yeah, thing with that with Keegan,
I think that was, go on, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, the thing with, I mean, it's been done to death, this I would love it. It's probably, yeah, number one in all the 100 greatest Premier League, all that sort of crap. But the thing about the Keegan, it wasn't really as much of a breakdown as people say it was, but he lost it a little bit. But the only sort of most important thing is Keegan, it gave him. He tried to become a sort of intimidating, hard man. He wasn't that. And if it had been someone like a, I don't know, even if it had been someone like a Mourinho or someone who'd known as being quite a hard man,
yeah,
in football, if it had been Graham Souness doing it, yeah, it, yeah, might have been a bit intimidating.
I'd have feared for my life, and I'm, yeah, not involved.
Exactly. Yeah. But Ferguson is obviously a canny operator, and he was at that stage, and he had won things by that point anyway.
He basically questioned Keegan's professionalism, though, which I think.
Oh, Ferguson's.
You know, Ferguson, that's what I mean. Yeah, Ferguson, yeah, yeah. Ferguson questioned Keegan's professionalism.
And something about Stuart Pearce, wasn't,
yeah, Stuart Pearce's testimony. Morning, I believe they were playing Nottingham Forest, and they reckoned that Forest would go easy on Newcastle. They didn't,
yeah. Yeah.
And Keegan went a bit.
He knew what he was doing, didn't he? All, yeah, over.
And I think that was it. Though.
But did he though? How many times does he just fire off his mouth just because he's, you know? He's,
I don't know.
He thinks it's his birthday.
Pete, you're gonna cast 10 in the.
Fuck him, Luke. Fuck him. Yeah. Fuck you lot.
But that was it, though, wasn't it? That you talked about the innocence of the whole sort of Keegan regime and so on and so forth, and it was just Ferguson, a bit of mind games and whatnot, and they gobbled them up, you know, and they won the league and. Oh, will we see Newcastle top of the league at January with the 12-point gap? Probably not ever again.
Well, we weren't far off last season. We did all right for a while.
You were far off.
I'm sorry, what?
we weren't that clear, but yeah. we were top of the league.
Let's move on to the next season, shall we? Which was 96-97, and Alan Shearer came in for $15 million.
That was massive at the time. That was absolutely seismic.
Well, it was the biggest transfer of all time. Yeah. So yes, you
literally rude.
Oi,
Pete. Steady.
Literally rude. A billion people came to watch us on Vale.
Were you there, Pete?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't there. Went to school.
So did the rest of them.
Schools were closed that day.
Yeah. They always have school. They're still on Sky Sports News.
Were in top of the class that day. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, they did get a little piece of revenge against Manchester United.
Oh God!
With a 5-0 victory in October.
Darren Peacock opening the score.
Hey, yeah, did that feel
a controversial
good
one as well?
A
wasn't
controversial.
It?
Dennis Irwin on the line, I think it was.
Did
trying
that
to clear it.
Did that feel good, Peter?
It did, just simply because the way that the first goal was scored was actually David Beckham losing the ball. He lost the ball, and I think it got whipped in. But
it didn't. Wasn't it five different scorers? Everybody
got
involved.
It was Ginola. It was Ferdinand. Beardsley. Shearer.
Albert, and.
Beardsley.
No, it's Peacock. Oh no, it was Ginola.
No, it was Ginola. Yeah, Ginola right got the one. Ginola got the second.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Then it was because Beardsley had a long shot from fucking miles out.
That's right.
And then Ferdinand had a go at Schmeichel. Schmeichel saved both of those, and then Shearer taps in.
Schmeichel's header sort of hit the post and the bar and then the post. And, but yeah, sorry. Ferdinand's header.
Oh yeah. It hits the stanchion, the bar, and then the post. And
what happened for the last goal?
Well, I think you find that I believe it is Lee. Lee putting it infield to Albert, drop of the shoulder, a turn of pace, and Schmeichel's all ends up. He's just on the penalty spot. He doesn't know what's going on. He's trying to do something, and Albert, a centre back from Belgium, has chipped him from at least 35 yards out. 50 yards out.
I tell you what, while you were telling that story, I have never seen Luke so far away from the microphone at a football round.
I'm just getting a few things, bits and pieces done. one thing I love about Albert.
Oh, that is. Is magnificent!
Is his photo in the that's my favourite fact. His photo in the bar at St James's Park.
Yeah,
centre back. Got photos of all the players. And Albert, centre back, his photo is him doing an overhead kick.
Amazing!
So good. Yeah. And then, unbelievably, Kevin Keegan left.
Yeah,
in January.
Yeah, he was kind of a spent force, wasn't he?
And that was the end of that.
It broke him.
Yeah. But I think a lot of that era was defined due to what the fuck Dalglish did after he left, because you know bringing in Ian Rush and your John Barnes and stuff, and it was just dour football at times.
It was slowing everything down.
I mean, they did finish second that year.
Yeah,
again, but
they sort of turned off quite badly.
He sold Beardsley, Ginola, Ferdinand, Lee Clark, John Beresford, Robbie Elliott, and Asprilla.
That's not going to get the crowd on side.
Didn't they finish bottom half season after that though?
I think they finished 13th. Right. Yeah.
Still took them to the FA Cup final, I suppose. So it's still, you know, not.
But the thing about Keegan is that he deserves a lot of credit because he's obviously emotionally exhausted after that stint at Newcastle. 5 years he was there, and when you're
and he never managed.
I'm not. I'm not being funny. You've got Alan Kerbishley and you sort of drably go through football life, 48 different shades of grey. You probably last forever.
Yeah.
But Keegan gave everything of himself into that job, and he really did exhaust himself. He deserves an immense amount of credit for that. For
he
genuine
went grey.
Yeah, he poured his heart and soul into it.
But it's just, you know, I look back on that era and wasn't it great? Wasn't it fantastic? And it's, to me, it's still a crying shame that they just couldn't get finish first over that line.
And the reason for that is that Keegan's greatest strength as a manager was also his final undoing. His greatest strength was his passion, his commitment, his ability to inspire his team and to really motivate his troops. And he was so passionate about it and poured so much of himself into it, it ultimately became the only thing he had left, and it undone him at the end. And he had nothing left to give, and that's why he had to go. He couldn't give anything more, and that's what undid him.
Absolutely.
And he worked with David Batty as well.
But what a period in Newcastle United's history.
That's why we're all here.
Yeah, exactly. A crying shame that they didn't win it. But still, though, amazing that it did happen. And they gave us one of the greatest seasons in the history of the Premier League. And the entertainers are coming in.
John Keegan. That's what we're going to be punching
away by right now. Nicky Papavassiloux there, yes. Striding in, arm in arm with Alex Matthey, yeah. Steve Guppy, and Paul Kitson.
Steve Guppy, one of the great things, lest we forget. Well, that's it, kids. That's all we've got for this week. If you want to get in touch, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com. The Twitter is @footballramble. And the website is thefootballramble.com.
Yeah, highlight of the website this week is you listeners out there. I mean, you're all boys, let's be honest. the ones of you, sort of very small percentage of you who actually have girlfriends, will know that they probably read 50 Shades of Grey, or that's whatever it's called, or that sort of thing. We've got 50 Shades of Andy Grey on the website this week.
Someone's done there.
Written by the very talented Charles Lawley. So check that out. That's thefootballramble.com. There's lots of other bits and pieces as well. You can listen to this profile. You can listen to that mammoth profile again on the website if you want. It's on there. So. Get involved. Yeah,
indeed. Any more for any more? No.
After that, I quit. So
yeah, I was gonna say.
It's been lovely, guys. Yeah. It really has.
Oh, and remember, if you are going to the Paralympics, come down and see me at the blind five-a-side football.
What event are you doing? You're playing blind five-a-side football,
no,
Marcus.
I'm presenting in the stadium, Pete.
Okay, that makes sense.
If you're there on the weekend as well, seven-a-side and five-a-side. If you are in the crowd and you see me approaching you with a microphone, then do try to remember the lyrics to any Spice Girls song, because I will be pouncing on you.
Oh, God.
Wow. Wind your body down.
Well, I wish 5 years ago when Marcus approached me with a microphone, I had said no. And look where it got me. Look where it got me.
Do I really, really, really want a zig-a-zig what?
Yeah, that's it. That's how it goes. Right. Say goodbye,
bye.
Jim. Say goodbye, Pete.
See you later.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. Ciao.
Newcastle would have taken one. Here they are, looking for number five. With Philippe Albert!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.